You're listening to OWW Radio,
the official radio show of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com.
All right. All right, so here we are. Living it day by day, you are a superstar. And he says what she used to always say.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this edition of OWW Radio. This is the official radio program of OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com. Each week, OWW Radio will bring perspective to WWE, TNA, and everything else making news in the world of professional wrestling. This week, we will discuss everything post-WrestleMania in the world of professional wrestling, and much more. My name is Alex. David is actually in Las Vegas this week for the Cauliflower Alley Convention. So, my name is Alex, and I am joined this week by Danny. Danny, how are you doing this week?
Pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding. So can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
Okay. I go by the Emperor Big D. It's my online handle. And I own a website called SuperFriendsUniverse.com, the epitome of manliness. And we talk all sorts of things manly, including professional wrestling. I have done like maybe thousands of shows on pro wrestling. And I'm very honored to be here with you because I like OWW. I used to go there for many years to get results. So it's a pleasure. It really is.
Yeah, it's like going all the way back to when I was in high school, in the late 90s, early 2000s, I remember going to at the time obsessed with wrestling and going to get results or whatever for whatever independent shows had happened throughout the weekend. All right, so Danny, we're going to go ahead and ring the bell and get the show started. World Wrestling Entertainment. WWE is coming off its biggest show of the year, which happens to be WrestleMania, and Brian Alvarez at the Wrestling Observer has reported that the buy rate numbers, the early predictions that are coming in, are a little bit lower than what the company may have expected. Danny, I think a lot of fans were disappointed with the show after all, but I think we still all went into it thinking that this was going to be the biggest show WWE has ever produced. What do you think about the buy rate numbers possibly coming in lower than expected?
Well, as far as the live gate goes, I mean, it definitely did break the record. Adjusted for inflation, you know, maybe not, but it definitely did, no matter what anybody tells you, numerically, right? So that they got that. They've got that. Now, as far as the buy rate goes, we really don't have a number yet. Alvarez speculated that it was lower than expected, and that tells me that it was probably under a million is what it tells me. And really, the reason for this, I think there's two main reasons. Actually three. Number one, I think that the price increase really affected the buy rate. I think that when people found out it was $60 or even $70 in some markets, I think that they said, fuck it, you know what I mean? I don't think they wanted it, because that's a lot of money. And to be honest with you, I mean, charging an extra $10 for HD in 2013 is like a crime. Like, you know, it's stupid. But yeah, $70 is a lot of money, and really, what are you paying for? You know, people have gone on record to say it's rematch-a-mania. A lot of people weren't happy with the booking. And the booking of the matches, the actual matches, on paper it looked fine, but I had issues with it all the way back in January when we found out what the card was going to be, or at least the three main matches. That's number two. And to me, number three, I think the number three reason why the show may have gone a little buy rate is because of the buildup. The buildup was, in a word, terrible. And it's pretty much across the board. I haven't actually spoken to a single person. I've talked to a lot of people who have said that the buildup was good. It's probably one of the worst buildups in history, like legitimately. And I think that they didn't do enough to get the fans excited. And really what it comes down to is something I've said for a very long time. And just for the record, I'm not one of these marks that reads the internet and blows all these internet guys. You know what I mean? I'm a pretty free thinker, and I've been around the block for about 25 years when it comes to the business. So I know what I'm talking about. I think that like I was going to say, I think what it is, what people need to understand is that it doesn't matter how many stars you have. Brock Lesnar, The Rock, it doesn't matter how many movies The Rock puts out. If your creative is not on point, people are not going to care. And there's evidence of this in the history of the business. Look at WCW. Look at WWE in 2001, 2002, when they had the greatest, most inflated roster in company history, and yet their buy rates and their pay-per-view and their ratings started to drop because the creative was, as Stone Cold would say, piss poor. So it matters.
Now, do you believe that WWE possibly could be seeing how far, like a race to the bottom? Let's see how lack of effort, I guess, we can put into it, which is interesting because you hear stories, at least the Reserver reports on it all the time, about how the creative team is burnt out from all the shows they produce. But seemingly the creative is getting worse as far as building to interesting matches. Do you feel maybe it's a race to the bottom to see what is the least amount of effort we can put actually into this and people will still buy it?
Well, I think what people need to understand also is that Vince McMahon, or so we're told. Again, remember, we really don't know what goes on back there. But
that's
Vince
a very good point. Ultimately, we don't know what goes on back there, but we can surmise from different news stories. But yeah, we don't know what's going on back there. That's a good point.
Yeah, and that's one thing that I feel like a lot of internet wrestling fans need to keep in mind, that we really don't know what goes on. Because, I mean, let's talk candidly here. You know, one of the creative team guys might come up with this really awesome storyline, and then they give it to the Undertaker, and he's like, I'm not doing it. You know, and then what? You know, maybe it's not their fault. But no, to answer your question, I think that Vince is the guy who has to sign off on everything. So, in reality, the creative can be blamed on him. You know, I mean, I find it very odd that a few weeks ago they fired that one writer, Eric Kampowski or whatever, I forget his last name. They fired him because he booked the four-way with CM Punk or whatever, and, you know, the whole thing. But didn't Vince sign off on that? I mean, how did that even make television? You know, that's what you really have to blame. I hate to say it. And I believe that Vince, I honestly believe this, it has slowly been going crazy. I think that ever since the XFL died, if you look at the creative, you look at the company, he's slowly been going into this state of madness. I think he kind of forgot how to do wrestling. I hate to say it, but that's what it sounds like.
So, what were your thoughts on, real quickly, on WrestleMania?
I didn't like the show, man. I didn't like the show. I thought that the Rock Cena match was piss poor. I really believed it. And I watched the one from last year, and I actually like it a lot more now in comparison. So, I didn't like the show. I mean, I liked a couple of the matches. The timing was completely off. And the thing that was interesting about the show, I mean, other than just the booking going into it, was the show just felt weird. Like, I don't know you and I haven't talked about this yet, but I've talked to other fans, very, very smart ones like yourself. There's only a few real smart fans out there, you know what I'm saying? But the show felt odd. Like, it felt empty. And maybe it was because we saw no promos. Maybe it was because all we saw was a bunch of movie trailers and video packages. You know, the show just felt like it was missing something. You know, No America the Beautiful. You know, these are traditions that I think are important. And so, I did not like the show at all. I was very open-minded to it. And there was two good matches, and that was it. To me, it was actually a thumbs down.
Well, what's interesting to me is that I felt like the effectiveness of every match, because, I mean, you can grade a match on its merit, right? So is this a good or bad professional wrestling match? But then also you have to kind of think, look, going forward, now that we've had this finish, what does this do for the future? And a lot of the matches at Mania, for my opinion, didn't really set up anything for the future, most notably the Ryback-Mark Henry match, because now here we are in a position where Ryback is expected to wrestle John Cena main eventing in the next pay-per-view, but at WrestleMania he lost clean to Mark Henry, and then they did the aftermatch where Ryback finally hit the move, but going forward, I mean, it doesn't really, it's like, did they understand that Ryback was going to be the next guy challenging? It's kind of, I guess...
They did, according to Dave Meltzer.
Right, apparently they did. So it kind of shows a flaw either in their creative or something.
Well, they just don't know how to book wrestling anymore. I mean, You had a very good example, right? The Ryback Mark Henry thing. This is the only company, like, in history, and I'm including, like, even the dark ages of WCW. I'm actually including that. This is the only time in wrestling where guys can go on these losing streaks, and the next week they're champions. And we've seen it consistently now for the past, like, maybe 2 years, but really consistently in recent times. Kofi Kingston has not won a match for 5 months. He beats Cesaro once, gets a title shot, wins the title. How does that make any sense? And then you've got Dolph Ziggler, who also has been on a ridiculously embarrassing losing streak, and now he's the World Heavyweight Champion. Their logic is that because a guy has a belt, we can beat him. And to me, that's the stupidest, most nonsensical, you know, aberration of logic. It doesn't make any sense to me.
So the week after Raw, the week after WrestleMania, Raw was obviously in New York or in New Jersey, and a lot of the fans were very vocal. But then the next week, it was 2 weeks after WrestleMania. Those WrestleMania fans had left, and a lot of people accused the fans that week of being very quiet, I guess. Now, did you feel like the fans were quiet the next week, or do you just feel like they weren't presented a show that was worthy of them getting excited for?
I thought they were actually a pretty good crowd. A lot of people have said, that crowd sucked. I didn't think they were that quiet. I mean, you know what it is? It's that crowd from South Carolina, it was Greenville, that is like a regular Raw crowd. You can't compare a regular Raw crowd to a crowd from, like, the post-WrestleMania day. And I think a lot of people kind of got spoiled on that, you know, last week, because to me, that crowd was not that bad. I mean, it wasn't fantastic, but it wasn't that bad. And I liked Monday's show. I really did. I thought it was a pretty fun show, a little too long, but I liked it. That being said, though, I don't think we're going to see a crowd like that Jersey crowd for a while, and I think people need to get used to that.
Yeah, I don't think we'll see him again until the day after WrestleMania, actually. Going to, you know, it's very hard for me to attack, I guess, kind of any crowd, because after I've attended a few live tapings of Monday Night Raw and SmackDown, there's very few things worth really getting up for on the show. And even your television main event, I mean, you've been conditioned to know that oftentimes these television main events don't really mean much. So it's kind of hard to say, you know, oh, this crowd was good, this crowd was bad. Because, I mean, they're there for hours, and honestly, they watch a lot of stuff that means nothing. They usually watch a Saturday Morning Slam or some kind of international TV taping. And then they watch Raw, which, I mean, I couldn't have seen anything to really get up for other than Brock Lesnar returning.
I agree. And I think, honestly, it all comes down to creative, man, because you're not giving people a reason to care. Like, this is the first WrestleMania where I just haven't cared. And I think one of the big reasons why the buy rate may have come in low is because people didn't want to see Rock and John Cena again because they knew that John Cena was going to win. And here's the other thing that I think fans need to realize. This whole, you know, they think that the smart marks are the only ones on the internet and that the marks are the ones outside of it. That's a crock of dookie, okay? Because I talk to people who are not wrestling fans as far as, like, you and I go, ones that just watch casually, and they even told me, I'm not watching WrestleMania because I know John Cena's going to win. People aren't stupid, bro. They know. Like, they know. You don't have to be on the internet subscribing to the Observer, to the Torch, to know that John Cena's not going to lose twice, you know? So, I that's why they didn't buy the show, because last year there was a little bit of a chance, well, they put The Rock over in Miami, well, Cena beat The Rock, blah, blah, blah. There was intrigue. This year there wasn't that, and I think as far as your comparison with television goes, you can't get behind anybody, because even if you get behind, like, a guy like Cesaro, who, you know, he's a heel, but he's an internet darling, you get behind him, and then he does great, and then they kill him. They kill him, and they've been killing him now for weeks, finally drops the belt. For no reason. He didn't do anything wrong that we know of. I mean, maybe he failed a steroid test. Maybe he hit on the wrong person. Who knows what really happened? I don't think so. No, I don't think so. But, okay, there's no reason to deep push the guy. And then you've got a guy, if you want to go for the babyface side, you've got a guy like Kofi Kingston who has been portrayed as a complete loser. Same thing with Zack Ryder for years and years. and now we're supposed to get behind them. It's just that start-stop push thing does a lot of damage, I think.
Ryback got into Twitter trouble yesterday. This is from the Wrestling Observer. He posted a bunch of anti-John Cena stuff, obviously in character, to build the match. One read, watching the pain on Cena's face was worth standing back for. Funny, the two things he says I lack is that's why he sees the love. Ryback later went and deleted all these tweets. What are your opinions on this forward way of, I guess, working the internet fans, and then the non-traditional ways that professional wrestlers feel like they need to work the internet fans? Do you believe there's any value in getting the internet fans riled up in this way?
Well, I don't know if it's really working as far as, like, trying to fool them, but I see what you're saying. I think he did that because WWE, you know, and I don't want to really go off too much on this because there's a lot of misconceptions about this, but WWE is a PG product, so he really can't make those kind of comments on TV. I mean, he can, but I don't think WWE wants the general populace to know that John Cena is divorced, things of that nature. You know, I don't think they want them to know, even though it's all over, you know, TMZ, or it was last year. So I think that on Twitter, he can get away with those kind of things.
It was on WWE. Remember, they had put up the video montage, and they had shown a newspaper clipping saying he had gotten divorced.
That's right.
It was all because of beating him.
Yeah, it was all because Rock beat him. That was kind of stupid. I mean, you're right, and that's why it doesn't make any sense to me. What it seems like to me is that right now you've got the left hand not knowing what the right hand is doing. I mean, that's really what it seems like to me. And I've felt this way for about maybe a year and a half or two. You know, the company's really kind of becoming WCW, and I really don't want that to happen. It's become very corporate. It's not a family-owned business. And I understand that because you have to grow your business, but it's run very corporately. There's too many fingers in the pot. There's too many politics. The Triple H is hiring, like, former golf, you know, athletic commissioners or whatever to do the cutting the paychecks. You know, it's coming off really, really like what's the word? Like a menace. I mean, messy, because there really is no reason for him to take down those comments, you know.
You know, you hear interviews, which is like our only access, of course, other than reporting, and we hear interviews with former members of Creative, and they talk about how the agents, who a lot of them are the former professional wrestlers, Arn Anderson's Fit Phillies, a lot of them kind of just go with the flow and aren't very aggressive when it comes to good and bad ideas. Seemingly, World Wrestling Entertainment was always its best when it had a strong professional wrestling mind like Pat Patterson or Jim Cornette challenging Vince. Could it be the absence of a strong professional wrestling mind at the head of the company kind of challenging Vince? Maybe Triple H doesn't feel like he can get involved in this aspect of the company yet. Basically, what I'm saying is you see a light at the end of the tunnel, and then possibly with one signing or one shift in position, we could see a return to a golden age of creative, I guess.
You know, that's a very good question because, you know, you mentioned the minds in the company. They have them. I mean, they have, you know, Triple H, you mentioned that. They have Michael Hayes. Also, I mean, they have very smart people there. You know, they had Dr. Tom, but they have, like, Norman Smiley, who is very, very smart. You know, they had, but they still have, well, Dusty's there, obviously, but Dusty has a certain way of booking. That being said, I don't know how to answer that, brother, because that's a weird situation. They've got people. I think that Vince might be, I mean, again, I don't know for sure. We don't really know, but this is speculation. He might be just a little too hard-headed. Like, I think he forgot how to book wrestling, and the rest of these guys just don't really want to fight with him, like you said, or maybe they also forgot, because, you know, these guys are all getting old. All of them are getting old, so maybe they forgot how it used to be. You know what I mean? Because I know that the creative team never fights with him. If they come up with an idea, you know, he will shoot it down, and then that's it. You're out of there. Sometimes he'll even embarrass you. That's why I can never work there. Okay, after hearing, like, Court Bauer and these guys, I can never work there. But I don't know, man. I think that there needs to be new blood. And a lot of people are like, it's the Hollywood writers. It's not. It's really not. On the contrary, I think that if I was running a wrestling company, I would have at least one Hollywood writer. I think the best way to go about it is to have somebody who's who knows about the business and somebody who thinks outside the bubble, and then you combine their ideas to make good creative.
You know, what's interesting, though, is that I've not listened to his commentary in a while, but Les Thatcher, for example, historically has been against a lot of the quote-unquote aspects of current professional wrestling, right? But how do you even promote, how do you even pitch an idea to Vince that's going to get his attention, right? And obviously, we've said many times the show, we don't know Vince McMahon personally. But, for example, if we ran a very, very, very successful business, one of the most successful businesses of all time in that genre, how do you pitch to someone saying, Vince, we need to dial it back and go more in this direction? I mean, at this point, I wonder if Vince kind of feels like he's beyond reproach. And pay-per-views are only 16. I mean, the WWE corporate site says pay-per-views are only 16% of the business model. So WrestleMania doesn't do over 1 million buys. It's going to do a ton of buys domestically, internationally. So maybe the guys don't even have the leverage to tell Vince, you know, we're going in the wrong direction, because they have been successful for many years, and this complaint has lingered around for at least 2 to 3 years.
And I'm so happy that you said that, because that, to me, is key. Like, that's the key right there. Because really, what can you tell the guy? I mean, what can you tell him? Vince, the creator sucks. Yeah, but look at our numbers. I mean, that wrestling is about making money. That's what it's about. And if you're not making money, all you're doing is beating your body up or wasting your time. I mean, that's really it. So, you're right. What can you tell the guy? You know, oh, the build-up sucked. Well, who cares? Look at all the money we made. You know, obviously the build-up didn't suck. So really, there is no argument here, and that's the scary part. That is the scary part, that there really is no leverage when you argue with the guy. It took them almost going out of business to change.
That's a great point. That's a great point. WWE has a press conference tomorrow in Orlando. This is likely going to be the announcement of a new campus, a training center for developmental. Triple H is going to be there along with the mayor of Orange County and the president of Full Sail University. This is going to be like a new expanded kind of developmental location, I guess. Triple H has kind of led the reins of developmental. I've not watched too much developmental. What are your thoughts on the developmental program currently that WWE has?
I used to go to FCW. I live in Tampa, so I was one of the guys. I was actually there the first 3 months straight. It's the developmental program now is, first of all, the NXT television is really good. It's probably like the best TV show they got, you know, weekly. But I think that the issue with developmental is that they teach only one style. And they do a lot of different things. And I do, like, you know, promo class and, like, Hollywood stuff. But my ideal developmental was what they used to do like 10 years ago, which was you had like 3 or 4 camps. You had Les Thatcher, you mentioned him. You had HWA, you had OVW, you had UPW, you had Memphis. I think it's better to have different places to send these guys. I think what they should do is kind of come up with a program where like 6 or 7 of these guys go to Japan for, you know, 4 months, and they come back, and then they will go to somewhere else, Landstorm's camp or something. I think that they need to diversify the camps, and I think having it all in one building, you know, it's the same trainers. I mean, I respect all those trainers, you know, don't get me wrong, but I think they need to go around the world and work with a billion different people and not just work with themselves, you know.
You know, what's interesting is that, I mean, Ricky Steamboat, Ric Flair, Ted DiBiase, I think we consider all three of those guys very successful pro wrestlers. But when their children decided to get into professional wrestling, they didn't initially send them down to Florida. They sent them to get work internationally.
Right.
And so it kind of makes you wonder about the developmental program that, you know, those three wrestling legends weren't willing to send their kids there directly. They wanted them to get some more seasoning. But when I watch Ted DiBiase wrestle on television, I can't tell that he's wrestled in Noah, for example. So why do you think that maybe these legends wouldn't want their kids initially to go to Florida? You talked about Russ learning the only one style. Do you think that's part of it?
Yeah, I think they're smart enough to realize that. I really do. I think they're smart enough to realize that, that they should learn more. But even then, when they come to Florida, when they come to WWE, they still go in there and kind of change them, you know, because they have to work the WWE style, you know, which, I mean, what really is the WWE style? It's not like the style itself is wrong. It's just that I feel like they would benefit from being able to work with a number of different people and not just the same people every week, you know.
It's interesting that they do want to base themselves in Florida. And it's also interesting that they've signed seemingly every independent talent that's made a name for himself in the past 5 years, which in my opinion has greatly depleted the independent wrestling scene. Do you believe that, because some of these guys, I mean, honestly, just to give my opinion, and I think I'm the most outspoken about El Generico than anyone, I think, that's ever talked about pro wrestling, is that historically, you look at World Wrestling Entertainment, El Generico is not the type of person that Vince McMahon would be interested in promoting on his television, not in any kind of significant way. But seemingly, signing all this independent talent has given hope to a lot of these independent wrestling fans that potentially the guys that they've invested time and money into could be big stars in World Wrestling Entertainment. The thing I always joke about is now, whenever we see an independent talent, oh, he could main event WrestleMania one day. It's not, you know, oh, I'd like to see him on Raw, or I hope he gets an opportunity in developmental. It's, oh, no, he'll main event WrestleMania one day. So do you believe that the signing of all this independent talent is really because they have this new perspective on independent wrestling, or do you believe that someone just in the company is saying, hey, we should look at this guy, we should look at that guy?
Both. I think it's both, because I think with the success of CM Punk and with the success of Daniel Bryan and these guys who were the indie darlings, I think that they've kind of understood that, okay, we can't just ignore these guys. Plus, where are we going to get the talent from? I mean, let's look at the people who they've trained individually. With all due respect, Mason Ryan never really did anything. He's under contract sitting at home. Ezekiel Jackson, nothing. Who else was a guy who trained under them? Alex Riley, I mean, he had a little run there, but he never got over. He just didn't, you know. A lot of guys who they've trained in-house have flopped. I hate to say it. So I think that they look at the indies and they say, okay, well, there's talent here, let's take it, you know, and they can. And also the other thing, too, is I think that they, you know, they justify it by saying, well, you know what? They're under us now, and we can job them out if we want, like Cesaro, for example. So if these indie guys get a big head, they're going to become jobbers. So they truly don't care. Like they just don't care. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it is for a long time viewer of WWE. It's interesting to see the change in mentality to where, I mean, they wouldn't sign big name independent talent forever, and now they're seemingly embracing it. What are your thoughts real quick on TNA and the fact they're running shows outside of Orlando? The shows look a lot bigger. What are your thoughts overall on the product, though?
I like it a lot. I really do. I like TNA right now, and you're talking to somebody who hated TNA for years. I think they have direction, even though maybe it won't be the best direction. And, you know, they're not perfect, okay? They're not perfect, but week to week, they're a lot more fun to watch than WWE. I like the way that the product is presented. I like the production. I like the Aces and Ace thing is kind of played out, you know, in a way. But I like the way that they have their booking lined up. I'm going to be going to one of those tapings. I think going on the road was a good idea, as long as they make money, and I think they will. I like TNA right now. I mean, I can't say that I'm enamored with it like I was in 2005 and 2006, but it's not a bad product. It's week to week. It's fun to watch, and I hope that they do well. I mean, they're never going to compete with WWE, but, you know, they have new guys. Like, and when I say new, like, okay, Bubba Ray Dudley's not new, but he's never been, like, the top guy ever before, and he's actually doing a pretty good job. He's a great heel, so I like it. I really do.
Thank you very much, Danny, for joining us this week. It was very enjoyable. And one more time, if fans couldn't get enough of your great radio voice, where can people go to hear more about you?
All right. Check out SuperFriendsUniverse.com. we have a lot of different radio shows on there, not necessarily pertaining to pro wrestling, but we do have a show. We got shows on video games. We got shows on movies. We got shows on manhood. My main pro project right now, my main show is called Super Friends Versus the World, where we talk about all kinds of stuff. We talk about game. We talk about your money, setting up your employment. Just kind of it's a self-help show. And I think everybody should check it out. I've had PhDs on the show. I've had researchers. I've had authors on the show. It really is a fun show. And I guarantee you there's going to be one or two episodes, maybe even more, that you can relate to and that you can learn from. So check out Super Friends Versus the World. And also check out the archives of the Super Friends Variety Show, which was our old show on Blog Talk. Awesome time, great fun, wacky show, prank calls, things of that nature, and some pro wrestling as well. And the other project I'm working on, one last thing, is I'm doing an extensive recap of all the WrestleManias called WrestleMania 30 for 30. It's going to start next week. We're going to recap all 30 WrestleManias, and yes, that includes next year. It's going to be a one-year project, and we're going to do extensive, in-depth mini biographies on all the performers, as well as the inside scoops on the story of all the WrestleMania. So it should be a fun little, like, timeless time capsule show. So check that out at SuperFriendsUniverse.com. Thanks for the plug.
Don't forget to check out the OWW website at OnlineWorldOfWrestling.com for the latest news, analysis, and updates from the world of professional wrestling. While you are there, you can also catch up on past episodes of OWW Radio. You can email us at radio@onlineworldofwrestling.com to submit topics or questions you would like us to discuss on upcoming broadcasts. Also, to make sure to follow us on Twitter at OWWCOM to get all the program updates and announcements. We will also be posting directly to the official OWW Facebook homepage. Until next time, this is Alex, and we hope you've enjoyed the program. We'll be back soon with another edition of OWW Radio.